Hello, hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, and I'm thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. Yes, here we are, week in and week out, having some fun doing something important, finding ways to add to your quality of life, because it's the answer to a prayer. Daily I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. So that's our overview. That's the goal. That's the lighthouse in the stormy seas that helps us to focus. And we're just so grateful for you tuning in and sharing with you every week something interesting and helpful. And before we get into the show today, I want to ask you to take a moment and learn a bit about our sponsor. The sponsor of the program that keeps us on the air is AdvancedLivingComfort.com. When you go to that website, you will find a tiny plug-in item that many customers call a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, because when you look at it, it looks like a stylish digital clock you'd have on your nightstand, your workstation, and when you plug it in, it's kind of like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. It's this amazing, pure, exquisite energy that helps you sleep better, helps you think more clearly, helps you connect more to your senses, to really the vibrancy of what's going on in life, because you're not being distracted by all the crazy energy from our high-tech electric world. So check out AdvancedLiving.com, and you'll see why people like Jack Canfield of Chicken Soup for the Soul, or Michael Beckwith of The Secret, or Eva Selhub, the Harvard MD, all kinds of wonderful conscious folks that care about health and well-being use this. And now, oh boy, are we in for a treat today? You know, we've just had some fun and adventures with Valentine's Day. And wouldn't we love to have our lives be the beauty of the commercials that they show us when we're being asked to buy anything and everything for that special someone? And if we don't, I'm surprised they don't just have a list where we could buy something and they'll send it to someone for us. As long as we spend money, that's all they care about. Well, guess what? The ins and outs of love, oh my gosh, as you have probably experienced at some point in your life, is when you let yourself go deeply into that place of love and attraction and romance, oh my gosh, it can just take over your life. Well, what if we could talk to someone that's made a study of this crazy little thing called love and have a chance to really get in and learn some of the stuff so that, well, if nothing else, for most of us, we start to find out, my gosh, we're not that weird after all. Which is always worth knowing, as far as I'm concerned. So, our guest today, you're going to just be thrilled and delighted. Let me share a little about her. Her name is Liz Langley, and she's a columnist for Sexist Magazine, and her writing has appeared both in and on the Salon.com, Jezebel, Alternet, Details, Glamour, Bust, Destination Weddings and Honeymoons, The Carnival Nation, and Gene Simmons' Tongue. And then she regularly blogs for MyPleasure.com, has been a columnist for the Toronto Sun and the Orlando Weekly and the Orlando Sentinel. I mean, you don't know where she's at any given moment. This woman is everywhere. And she's won awards for the Society of Professional Journalists, Florida Press Association, Association of Alternative News Weeklies. Her work appears in Best Sex Writing 2008 of the Cleus Press. And, of course, when you don't think you have enough to check into, well, my gosh, her blog is going to make you happy up one side and down the other. And that you can find at LizLangley.com. So let us welcome our wonderful guest and find out about this crazy little thing called love. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Ken. Thank you so much for having me. What a nice introduction that was. I am all over the place, but right now I am right here with you and with your listeners.
Ah, wow. Well, this is good. Well, we're going to then just kind of see what we can find out from all your magical, mystical stuff that you did putting this wonderful book together called A Crazy Little Thing, Why Love and Sex Drive Us Mad. And I guess that would be a good lead question. Why do love and sex drive us mad?
Well, I think that there are a great many reasons, and I want to touch, before I start talking about the scientific part of it, because I did get to look at a lot of people's studies. As you said, you know, there are a lot of studies on love and what it does in our brains and what it does also, you know, the psychology of love. And what I did was piece together those studies, some neuroscience, some psychology, and stories, because people love stories. I love stories. And he has certain stories of people who have very extreme experiences in love. And I kind of wanted to find out maybe why some people go off the deep end, because we all kind of do. But another thing I want to touch on is that you started talking about Valentine's Day. And I think that there are so many influences like that. We think, you know, we grow up seeing love as some sort of kind of easy, magical, easy peasy kind of thing that we see in the movies or on TV or in the ads, you know, that this is what love is supposed to look like. And love is really complicated, and we are really complicated. And so it's not as easy as, you know, if you see somebody do something like Olympic ice skating, and they make it look so simple. It's because they've worked really hard at it.
Ah.
They've practiced for many, 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 many years. And so nothing is usually really that easy right out of the gate. And so so I think part of the reason love drives us mad is our expectation. And that's, I talked about that a little bit in the book, but I've thought about it a great deal more since. And I think that we have some expectations of love that may be unrealistic. We may think it's supposed to be easier than it actually is. But going back to the chemistry part of it, a woman named Dr. Helen Fisher is a biological anthropologist at Rutgers University. She's a terrific researcher and one of probably my biggest inspiration for this. She wrote a book in 2004 called Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love. And what Dr. Fisher and her team did was they advertised looking for people who were very much in love, who were madly in love, And they put them in a brain scanner, an fMRI machine, and they showed them, they would show them a neutral photograph, and then they would show them a photograph of the person that they were in love with, and watched how their brain changed, watched what areas of their brain were really, really active when they were looking at that picture.
Wow.
And I know, right? And that's, you know, we were talking about technology and things like that before, and this is one of these, like, just miracles of science, that we can actually look at our own brains and see what's going on in them at any given time and understand ourselves so much better from that. It's pretty spectacular. And so what she found were, the areas that were lighting up were areas that were associated with production of several different chemicals, two neurotransmitters in particular. One is called dopamine, the other is norepinephrine. Norepinephrine is like adrenaline. So when you see that person that you're absolutely wild about, your heart beats a little faster and your palms get a little sweaty, and you find that just at the moment you need to be really suave and cool, you can't even talk. that chemical is making you, you know, race a little bit more quickly than you normally would. And then there's dopamine, and dopamine is kind of the big one when you're really smitten and really crazy about somebody, because dopamine is a chemical of motivation and reward. It's in the reward center of the brain. These parts of the brain that were active in the limbic system of the brain. And so it's about craving and desire, and it's about sex, and it's about motivation, and it's energy, that specific kind of energy. I always just think, and dopamine does a lot of things for us. It's also a chemical of novelty. When you see something new that really is exciting for you, then that's dopamine working again as well. It also become associated with music. There's a study out of Toronto in 2010. I think it was Toronto or Montreal. And people who were highly responsive to music, they would find that they had the same kind of dopamine release when they were waiting for their favorite passages of music. And then a totally different part of the brain would light up when they actually heard those passages of music.
And so
it makes so much sense, you know, then why love and music are so deeply associated with each other. And dopamine is also a chemical of creativity. But what happens, the downside of it is that they did another study in 2010, and they said, because when they studied people who were rejected in love in the same study, they found that the same areas were lighting up, and the dopamine was still really active. And what was going on in this, there was another study in 2010 where they found that the same in a rejected lover, somebody who just had a breakup, and we all know how terrible a breakup can be, in a rejected lover, the same areas of the brain were active that are active in profound cocaine and nicotine addiction. So that hunger and that desire and that motivation that you feel when things are good doubles up when things are bad. It gets worse because you have invested in this, and those chemicals don't just go away when they don't just recede exactly when they're supposed to be receding and you would wish they would just go away. Then they make themselves more active because you're more motivated to pursue that thing that you're potentially going to lose or have lost. Well, the way I think of it is, you know, there's a big difference between somebody who is the motivation of somebody who is looking to get a job and someone who is afraid of losing their job. There's a big difference in feeling there. You know, the motivation of somebody who wants a job is like they're excited, they're optimistic, they're looking forward to it. Then the person who thinks they're going to lose their job could feel desperate and fearful, and it's a motivation, but a different tone. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
So when you're heartbroken, you're heartbroken. Like, a lot of people don't get out of that. Some people handle it a little more easily than others, but there's a reason why you can't concentrate. When you fall in love, when things are, you know, we were talking earlier before the show about how, like, when things are good, it's hard to concentrate because things are good. When things are bad, it's hard to concentrate.
Yeah.
Things are bad. So it can be a difficult thing all around where, you know, hopefully, you know, we find a happy medium. But when it's at that initial stage of smitten attraction, adoration, infatuation, especially, that can be very difficult. So, and, you know, you spoke earlier, too, about, you know, improving people's quality of life. And I do think it's really important because people feel really bad. They feel stupid. They feel like, what did I do wrong? And you may have done nothing. Love can be very capricious. So it's not you, and it's not, oh, I can't let go. There's something wrong with me. It's like, well, you're having a hard time for a reason. You have to give yourself a little time, and there may be other things that you need. You may need therapy, or you may need, you know, to talk to more friends, to not isolate. There's a lot at work there.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So this comes back to what you were saying about things can be not just a little bit, but majorly complicated.
Oh, absolutely. And this is just the brain chemistry part of it. There's layers and layers. The way I think of this is, you know how when you're in a department store dressing room and there's a mirror in front of you and a mirror behind you? And because you kind of have, you're sandwiched in between two mirrors, you see a lot of images of yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's you, and there's you, and there's you, and there's you. It like seems to stretch on for infinity. I think of this that way. There's the brain chemistry layer. There's the psychology layer. There's the culture you grew up in. There's your background. There's a lot of different layers of you that go into your relationship. And then there's all the different layers of the other person as well. And so it is complicated. You're working with a lot of stuff. And what one of the big things that I like people to know is to not feel stupid or ridiculous because you're having a difficult time. We all have a difficult time. We are complicated creatures. And, you know, yes, this is a chemical. Part of it is a chemical issue, but you also have, in addition to all those chemicals, you have a neocortex, which is where your ability to reason is.
Oh.
And your ability to feel empathy and to understand the cost of a thing and the consequence of a thing. So you don't run out and do something rash because that neocortex helps you understand that there are consequences and that neocortex can help you not go off the deep end. And so there's that part of it too. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, it's your chemistry, therefore nothing you do is your fault. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's good to be aware of it. I like the idea of being aware of ourselves biologically because I think it does make us understand ourselves better. But we also do have a responsibility to ourselves and other people to make empathetic and intelligent, emotionally intelligent decisions too. So there's a grieving process if you have a breakup, and there's also, you know, we all understand the obsessiveness of new love. Your serotonin levels can drop when you're newly in love, and that's also been found in obsessive compulsive disorder. So that might explain why you are thinking about them over and over. So there's all of these little elements to it that make you understand yourself better. And I think, you know, knowledge is power. And to understand ourselves a little better is to be able to deal with our problems, our ups and downs a little better.
Oh, my gosh. You know, as you were saying that, I was wishing for some relief. And so my mind, in its infinite weirdness, decided to say, oh my gosh, well, we need something simple. So I want to be able, instead of a relationship, I would just like to have massive cravings for delivery pizza, and then it shows up, and I eat it. Yes. And I don't feel guilty. No. And I know I can do it again if I want to.
Well, I mean, and you can. Of course you can. As long as you can afford it, You can afford to order 50 pizzas. You can call and order 50 pizzas and eat all of them. But there's where that little neocortex problem comes in that's going to say, you know what, if you do this, you're going to feel so horrible like half an hour, and none of your pants will fit anymore. And then it'll cut. Then you have to buy a whole new wardrobe, and I'm going to spend all my money on pizza, and then I won't be able to pay my power bill because I want that much pizza.
Yes. I crave it that much, and it is mine, and I can have it, and it'll never say no to me. Ha!
But you know what, Ken? Pizza comes a little too easily, and we never want what we can have a little too easily, do we? You know, pizza delivery is pretty fast. Pizza's not that expensive.
Yes.
So you want to be like, you want those motivational chemicals to have a little exercise, like a little bit of work, a little bit of excitement waiting for the pizza guy.
Yeah. And if something happened and they got the wrong toppings on it, well, chances are we're going to eat it anyway. Because I love you just the way you are, you know.
Oh, if only pizza could just make everything, if only pizza could be the one thing that we all just wanted, then half of us could make the pizza and half of us could eat the pizza and the world would be a happy place.
Ah. Well,
that's balance.
Yes. Oh, but I'm just so excited, Liz, about the way you're helping us to get this idea about the powerful, you know, brain chemicals involved. And it wasn't all that many years ago, Robert Palmer and the song Addicted to Love.
Exactly.
Well, I guess it wasn't, you know, probably back in the 80s, but...
91, I think. I'm guessing 91.
Okay.
And then in 75, there was Love is a Drug by Roxy Music. You know, people... And then Midsummer Night's Dream, you know, way back in Shakespeare had written Midsummer Night's Dream, and there was the magic love potion that made you fall in love with the first person you saw. So there is that. There's one thing that we don't really know for sure. There's a lot of things we don't know about love still, but one thing is that you can't really ever tell who it's going to be that's going to captivate you that way. They have yet to be able to have somebody walking around with a brain scan going on that pinpoints the exact moment when they go, oh, it's going to be him, or it's going to be her. That's the one right there. And what makes us attracted to these different people? There are psychological theories about what makes us attracted to different people. And there are some theories about scent, you know, the kind of...
Oh, the pheromones and...
Mm-hmm, that we give off, and things in our past, things in our childhood that make us be attracted to one type of person rather than another. So this is what Crazy Little Thing is. It's a kind of a compilation of stories of some people who have had some good times and some very, very bizarre and bad times in love. Because I do like the drama. So I looked at a lot of bizarre stories, but then also some of those explanations of psychology and chemistry of why do these people do these things? Why do they go off the deep end? And why do some people kind of lose their marbles and some people handle it pretty well or appear to, you know? So that's a lot of the things that the book covers. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's, that really helps us to know what we could dive into. And now to get a copy of this book, because absolutely, folks, if people have been saying that your life is too normal, you need to get a copy of This Crazy Little Thing.
or yeah, if one of your friends gives you this book and says, "I think you really need to read this," then you've got a little rethinking of things to do. They're trying to tell you something. And you can get it on Amazon.com is the quickest way to get it, and it's available on Nook and Kindle. So if you are lucky and have one of those cool little devices, then yeah, you can get it that way as well.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is
this
is good. And do you recommend, for instance, reading it on first dates?
No, but you know, you're the first person to ask me. Not on, but maybe a little bit before. So that when you're you know, if you're really, really charged up, and then you can tell yourself, like, well, this is maybe my mind is racing a little bit on this. I got this adrenaline working, I got this dopamine working, and you can kind of, what's cool about the biological thing is that it lets you step outside yourself, I think, and see, okay, this is what's working inside me. Do I want my reason to take over now? Or do I just want to let things go?
Yeah.
And you know, if the person is a good person, if that other person that you're kind of a little smitten with is a good person for you, then why not? You know, then you should. Love is an absolutely spectacular thing. If it wasn't, we all wouldn't be looking for it or questioning it or trying to get it right or missing it. You know, there's a reason there's so many songs and stories and movies about love. It's so important to us all, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and what's so interesting, there was, of course, a classic from many years ago, Love is a Many Splendored Thing, which is kind of beautifully romantic. And then I wonder where there's the song that would go with that, Love is a Many Splintered Thing.
I think that was the Jay Giles Band when they sang Love Stinks. That was in the 80s. Remember that? there are plenty of songs about heartbreak, too. You know?
Yes. Oh, good. Okay. Well, so we got... So it's sort of like, all right, folks, jump on board, enjoy the ride, and know that you're going to be going through all kinds of stuff. And if you think your brain chemistry is too stable, obviously, just look at someone and go, oh, baby.
Just fall in love. If your brain chemistry, if you feel like you're too stable, all you need to do is fall in love. And and you will make your life very exciting right away. It can be a good thing. It can be a difficult thing. But it certainly, it's worth trying, you know. Nobody writes a book like this without having been through the mill a couple of times. And I certainly have. But I never think it's not worth it. You know, it's always worth it. I think it's the best high you can have. Unfortunately, it can also be the worst crash. But it's a really important thing. And like you said about Valentine's Day, too, you know, sometimes we look at aspects of it that maybe aren't really all that important. We get upset with people about things that are superficial. You didn't get me the right thing for Valentine's Day. That doesn't really matter so much. You know what I mean? And somebody asked me, you know, are you the romantic type, the long-stemmed roses type? And it's like, yeah, that's all nice and well and good, but it's not about that. You know, it's really not about the material things. It's about, do you listen to each other? Do you support each other? And do you pay attention to who the person really is and not who you want them to be? And do they do that for you? I think those are really important questions, too.
Mm. Wow.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, somebody, I said that about the roses, and somebody said, you just saved me about $50. I'm going to go. It's not about the roses. Like, well, maybe it is for her, you know.
Yeah.
It's not for me. That doesn't. We're all different. So.
Yeah, and folks have to remember, thanks to modern business and industry, the fragrance of roses is now in your imagination, because it's been bred out of most of the industrial roses that we pick up anymore, unfortunately.
Is that true? The scent of roses has been altered from mass production? I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure why. If you look at aromatherapy, for instance, the vibration of roses is one of the most healing things.
I believe that. I would completely believe that.
Yeah, and of course, the idea of... like in childhood, if someone was hurt and mom comes in and kisses it all better, I mean, it's just like the miracle of love. And here's the rose that is that vibration of love that is can be so incredibly healing. And unfortunately, commercial roses, for some reason, I haven't researched why, but what I've done is that sometimes actually gotten some rose essential oil and then sprayed it onto roses, and people are going, wow, these really have a lot of fragrance to them.
Clever.
Yes.
Well, you must have paid a bundle for those. Yeah, an extra $5 or so for the. That's very, very smart.
Oh, well, if you like that aroma, and I do, it's worth it. Now I'm just so excited to know more, because there's so many stories, and I'm trying to figure out, well, what it helped you to decide whose stories were compelling enough to be part of the book.
Well, I mean, some of it was the people who would talk to me. You know, there's not everybody, surprisingly enough, not everybody wants to talk to you about the time that it was like the worst time in their lives, where maybe they assaulted someone over love, or killed someone. There's a story. There is one story in the book of murder. There is one story of assault. There's a story about abandonment. The way that I decided was, if the story, I wanted to get a variety. I wanted to get a big variety. So, because I am I'm kind of a grazer when I read.
Oh.
I like to go here and there and over there and over there. And that may be the influence of the web. I'm not sure. But I like a big variety. You know what I mean? That's
a book.
Yeah. And with a book, you know, you have it's several different narratives. It's a lot of different narratives. And I picked some of the stories that were the most extreme, or some of the stories that really resonated with me. There is one story that I really love, and this is one of my more positive, upbeat ones. It's a woman named Nina Paley, who is a cartoonist. She's a cartoonist and a filmmaker. And I saw this beautiful movie that she made called Sita Sings the Blues, which is about the Hindu goddess Sita and her marriage to the god Rama. And the subtitle is The Greatest Breakup Story Ever Told.
Oh, wow.
and it's this gorgeous film. I'm going to say the title again so people can go and look for it online, because you can see it for free online. Sita, S-I-T-A, Sings the Blues. And so I saw this film, and it's this beautiful animated movie about the Hindu goddess and what happens to her. And there's a concurrent storyline of a contemporary couple who are going through something very similar. And I was so wowed by this movie. It's everything that I love. Uh-huh. I love animation, and it was all set to this 20s jazz. And so it's really interesting, and it was so colorful and powerful. And then I read the press kit on it, and it said that the other breakup story was Nina's story. That she was the person who had been broken up with in the modern love story. And I thought, what? Like, I'm used to seeing stories of people get broken up with, and they go crazy. they try to kill somebody, they assault somebody, or else, you know, there's the classic, like, laying on a couch crying and eating ice cream. You know, and he or she turned around and made this amazing movie. And I thought, what does she know that the rest of us don't know?
Yeah.
And so I asked her. So that's why I wanted to talk to Nina Paley, because I was so impressed with, you know, there's a quote in the book that another author, I read in another author's book, Christina Nehring, who I also interviewed for this book, Jean-Paul Sartre said, freedom is what you do with what's been done to you. And I love that quote because it really is about, it can take some time sometimes. And I'm not one of those people that says, oh, just think positive and everything will be okay. It can take a really long time for everything to be okay. And while you're mired in it, sometimes you can't see, you can't think that anything good is going to come of it. And that's why I really like Nina's story so much, is because it shows that no matter how bad it gets, you can do something beautiful, even with something very, very sad. And it took her a long time. She had a breakup with her husband, and that's kind of a longish story, but it was really devastating. And she did go through a very long period of depression. And the only thing she liked, she said, was the idea of working on this film. She had this idea, and it was like all of her other work and all of her other endeavors, she kind of couldn't really care less about at that point. But she really liked the idea of Theta. So she made a commitment to the film, and it took 3 years. And she went and made this film, worked on this film every day, and it pulled her, helped to pull her out of this. Mm. And I thought, you know, she in the book, it tells a little bit more detail of how she got out of it, but I think it was processing the grief, allowing herself to grieve. She was seeing a therapist, and there are a few other elements, but it was not an easy process. It's not, for some people in some situations, it's very difficult, and I don't think that people should shortchange their grief. You know, if you're really in pain, you don't let people say, oh, snap out of it. It's not that easy. You might need a little more help, you know, and a lot of times people say when we have a breakup, oh, you just need to meet another person. Oh, you just need to get out a little more. And all those things may help, but you'll know when you're better. You'll know when you're done, and you will be done, and you will be ready to move on at some point.
Yeah.
That I have absolute unshakable faith in that. And so then that was one of the nice stories. And then you want to hear the craziest?
My favorite, the
story that really put me on, made me decide to do this, is the story of Bert and Linda Pugash. Bert and Linda met in the 50s in New York, and they dated for a little while, and I'm going to kind of, you know, shorten the story as much as I can. It's a long one. But they dated, and after a while, they split up. Linda found out that Bert was already married, among other things. And, it was quite a courtship, and quite, and he was a lawyer, and so he had money, and he could romance her in ways that other guys couldn't really match, you know, because he could afford it.
Yeah.
You know, unbeknownst to her, there's a wife and a child. And so so she breaks up with him, and he's so devastated, and he starts to drink a lot, and he's trying to get her back to the point of, you know, of driving her a little nuts. And then he decides, he hires three guys to beat her up, thinking that she'll run back to him for protection when this happens to her. And he's not in his right mind. This is what I mean when I say crazy.
Yes.
You know, we sometimes are just not in our right mind. This isn't really who we are. And so, and again, you know, we do have these other processes that are supposed to step in and say, no, that's a bad idea. You don't want to do that,
yeah,
especially to somebody you love.
Well,
right?
I can see a bumper sticker that says, where's my neocortex now that I need it?
Well, exactly. You know, you reach for that ideal, and sometimes some, you know, people fall short of it. Obviously, it happens a lot. And so... so what happened, he hires these guys to beat her up, and one of these guys did something Bert did not, he says, he did not tell them to do, which he threw lye in Linda's face. And it, yeah, and scarred her, disfigured her. She eventually went blind from the attack. And it took a long time for her to completely lose her eyesight, but her eyes were irreparably damaged, and... Bert went to jail for 14 years, and Linda, she had a job, and she dated, but not really seriously. It says in the book, and this I read in a story, she felt like damaged goods. You know, she felt no one would ever really want her. And when Bert got out of jail, he asked Linda to marry him, and she did. After what he did and what she suffered through, and he was so kind of craven for her, and he asked her to marry him, and she did. And I was just like, I was so dumbstruck by this. I read a story about it online, and there's a documentary about them called Crazy Love. And I saw the movie, and I thought, you know, you just never know what goes on in people's minds. You know, you never know what goes on within a private relationship. Yeah. And I went and spoke to Bert and Linda, and they're kind of a really funny couple. Like, I mean, they're really interesting people to be around, and I was very taken with the whole thing, especially with her ability to kind of just go on, and she has a real presence and a real kind of dignity about her. She's a tiny, tiny little woman, and she did not really want to be interviewed. Bert really likes to be interviewed.
Yeah.
And she does not really like to be interviewed. But I spoke to Dr. Ian Kerner about Bert and Linda's case, and why is it that, you know, this is an extreme example of a dangerous situation, but people always want to know, like, why is it that women seem to prefer a dangerous type? You know, there's the
bad
boy.
Yes.
And what he said was, there's a psychological theory called the shaky bridge theory. And what it is that people, if you're in a situation with someone where that adrenaline level is really high, and that's kind of like danger, and something's about to burst, that level of tension, it can make you feel that an attraction to them, because they represent that excitement to you. When you see them again, that whole feeling of excitement kind of that rushes back, even if the situation was dangerous, that can happen. And it's called the shaky bridge theory because this is a psychological study. I think it was in the 70s. There were two bridges over a river. I can't remember the name of the river, but it was like very, very high, very dangerous and rocky. One bridge was very stable, and one bridge was very shaky. Like, so you're going over this bridge, and it feels like you're going to fall off the bridge any minute now. Mm. And what they did was they would send guys over this bridge, the stable one and the shaky one. And at the end of the bridge, there was a girl, a pretty girl, who would say, she would give them her phone number and say she was interested in this study and would like to talk about the study with them. And what they found was the guys who went over the shaky bridge were more likely to call her, because there was this intensity and this excitement, this feeling of, even though it's a feeling of danger, it's also a feeling of excitement. So we associate even those when we have those rushes of excitement, even though it might be a dangerous situation, we associate that intensity with that person, and it can make us more drawn to them. And some people also are really, and some people also, like, their relationships, I'm sure we all know people whose relationships seem to survive on drama. You know, they're forever kind of at each other for something. And, you know, they fight and make up and fight and make up and fight and make up. And
yes.
So that would explain that. You know, I've seen couples like that. I've been around couples like that, and I just think, why don't you just leave? But you can't say that.
And
because
on
then they just get mad at you.
They, when Jerry Seinfeld show, they would mention a number of different times about the best sex being makeup sex.
Right. That I think also comes back to that feeling of, you feel like you might have lost that person. You get in a fight, that person walks out, and then there's all that dopamine rush too. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose this important person. What if it's really like the last time I see them? And then they come back, and there's a huge rush of relief. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of chemistry. When we talk about there being, you know, chemistry, we now can see it.
Yeah.
We now can really, are more capable of seeing these correlations. So I think for a long time it was just a term, and now it's a real thing. So yeah, that's true.
Ah, okay. So that would help. I've heard stuff of, what do you call it, like, if you're going to go out with a woman and you have an interest in pursuing something, and you had a choice to to go see a National Geographic documentary or something pretty scary, you'd want to pick the scary movie.
Yeah, you want to pick the scary movie because you're, I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but it's your adrenaline is going to be up. There's that feeling of danger, that feeling of excitement. And if she is going to, like, all of a sudden need somebody to grab hold of you, it's going to be you, you know?
Yeah.
So.
You hope so, anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, darn, that usher got me again.
Especially like if it's a DVD that you're watching together at home, there, hopefully.
Yeah, put
not
the odds
like,
in your favor. They're not going to run to the neighbor next door and go, I need you.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I'm a big fan of horror films myself. So.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So there we have, once again, and about getting some, they talk about coming alive or actually feeling in some intense emotion.
I think a part of this too is there's certainly some beauty to the craziness. It's not all not all of the craziness is bad. If it can get a little too intense, if you're getting obsessive, you know, if you're feeling that kind of crazy, you know, you're obsessing or you're on the verge of stalking or something like that, then obviously that's not a good thing. You got to consider what you're doing. But there's a little part of the craziness that's fantastic. I do think that we feel a lot more alive when we're in love. And I think that that is part of that kind of walking on air dopamine rush that we get when we, you know, we see that person and, you know, we walk a little lighter, we walk a little bit off the ground.
Yeah.
And there's wonderful, wonderful things about it. And so we certainly want to feel that way without it becoming painful. And if it does become painful, we want to understand that it's not just us being ridiculous. There's a lot to it.
Wow. Yeah. I'll say this is just some amazing work you've put together in this. And once again, the title of the book and where to get it?
Crazy Little Thing, Why Love and Sex Drive Us Mad. And you can get it on Amazon.com. You can also just go to my website. If you go to LizLangley.com, you can click right on the book cover and it'll take you directly to Amazon. And you can get it on Nook and Kindle as well if you are a techno person. I think those little things are so cool. I don't have one myself yet, but I also like the old fashioned, like, I'm already calling it old fashioned, like to have paper. To have an actual book. I'm already sort of thinking of it that way, even though I don't have a Nook or Kindle or anything, an iPad or anything like that to read anything on. So.
Sure. Well, I mean, to me, they may be doing something with the Nook and Kindle screens, but with books, you have an opportunity to have a more tactile experience.
Yeah, there's something really comforting about curling up with a book, and because I don't have a Nook or a Kindle yet, I don't know that experience is the same with those things. I tried out on my friend's iPad one time, and I thought it was just the spiffiest thing in the whole world. But I do like, there is something very, very comforting about being able to curl up with a book and, you know, read your favorite parts of it over and highlight things. And it's a nice, they did a nice job on it. And so there's a lot of stories in it, but crazy
sure.
little things.
And if you're talking
Many
about, like,
things.
Danger and excitement, no one ever hurt themselves on a Kindle, but the paper cuts of a book. Oh, terrible.
May that be the most dangerous thing that happens to anyone today. I hope that the worst thing that anybody has to worry about today is a paper cut. Although paper cuts can be pretty mean, I got to say.
Yes. They haven't made it into the statistics of the top 500 of reasons that people leave the planet.
No.
So, you know, how'd he go? Paper cuts.
It was a really big piece of paper.
Yes.
It was really bad.
Well, this is just so amazing and fun and wonderful. We've got about 5 minutes as we get down to the end of what I think could be probably a good 6 or 7 hours of talking to you and going in depth to this stuff. This is fabulous. What kind of things would you be wanting to share that you might not have mentioned yet about your book or about just what your research, anything?
Well, I'll tell you, there are a couple of things. I have also, I have another website that's connected to my blog. So if you go to my blog, you'll be able to find it. But it's a blog called Crazy Little Thing, and it's just stories of crazy love. And because I read so many of them, and especially now, I seem to see them every day. We see them all the time. If love was easy, there wouldn't be any of these stories. And so there was one on Valentine's Day. There was a story, the Huffington Post ran a story about a museum in Croatia called the Museum of Broken Relationships.
Oh.
And people, yeah, I was absolutely so moved by this and kind of happy about it in a way. Like, people would send their little artifacts and their, you know, things from their relationship and their story of their relationship. Like, there was one, they have a garden gnome. It's all broken up, like his little face, kind of like there's pieces off it. Somebody threw it at somebody. I guess, like, threw it over their car. It bounced off their car. It hit the driveway. And I can't remember where it was that happened, but they sent their little garden gnome and their story to the museum. And I thought, wow, like this is the final thing, I guess, that I'll say, is that I think that museum and some of the stories as well represent the fact that you think you're alone when these things happen to you. We feel so alone if we have a breakup or if we have a bad time in love, the person we love doesn't love us back. We feel like the only person in the world. And that's really the time. And this is something Nina Paley says in the book. This is the time when you really are the most connected to humanity, because we have all felt alone. And we all sometimes feel alone. You're never the only one. I would be very surprised if anyone was ever the only one who did anything. There's always, If not a million people, there's always someone else in the boat with you. And they may not be broken up about the same person as you are, but they've had, you know, plenty of other people have had their heart broken too, and they can relate to you, and you're not by yourself. And I think that's a really important thing. And this museum, like, it's kind of a funny little whimsical way of seeing that. But it is a very important thing that people need to know. I think people, it's very dangerous to isolate and to feel isolated, because our thoughts can drive us crazy. And so getting out there and getting that perspective and maybe helping someone else out of some crisis. Sometimes when we help other people, it can be a really great way to get our mind off our own problems. So that's another part of it. So there's that second website, and then that knowledge that it's definitely not just you. So, you know, and also, like, a little crazy is okay. you want it to be, like, crazy enough to be fun.
Okay.
But not so crazy it starts to be painful, you know.
So, yeah. Well, yeah. And to me, what I'm thinking about is the metaphor, because people have talked about relationships being like a roller coaster ride.
Mm-hmm.
And what I from our conversation, what I is so exciting about that is, okay, go for the ride and remember that it is a ride,
mm-hmm.
that it is intended for a fun and adventure, and that part of it is about the thrills and the chills and the spills, and then you actually, if you're lucky, most of the time you get to get off the ride and go have lunch.
That's a very good way to say it.
Yeah.
You do get a break from the ride sometimes. And
yeah.
Then you get back on the ride when you're ready.
Yeah, okay. Well, geez, this is awesome. Thank you so much for taking time, Liz, to be with us and help to shine a wonderful light on one of the most compelling things in our lives.
Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome. You have a wonderful evening, and we'll look forward to perhaps following up and getting more fun and adventures on what you're doing. And just thank you again, and beloved listeners, thank you. As we wrap up, until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now.
Let go and let God, let myself loose and let go of it. Let